Firstly, it's important to say that it's a very welcome decision, and we'll have to see now over the next 6 months what reaction and what measures the state takes to actually implement the decision or the ultimate order of the court. As far as what impact it will have on the lives of asylum seekers, that's yet to be known or yet to be determined until we see the reaction of the state. Ultimately, though, this prohibition, which the Supreme Court found to be unconstitutional, this has been a barrier for asylum seekers living with dignity in Ireland since the inception of the direct provision system. So if that barrier is removed, if that prohibition is effectively removed now, so not just in an illusory way, but in a real and effective way where asylum seekers can access the labour market, then you will see massive positive impacts for the 3,500 asylum seekers living in direct provision currently, and for persons in the future who arrive in Ireland seeking protection and can ultimately at some point access the labour market.
I mean, will that in a sense change the way that asylum seekers are received? Because they will now essentially be almost like any other economic migrant coming to the country looking for work. I mean, will it get to that stage? What will differentiate them from another economic migrant?
No, that's a fair question, and it's one, I suppose, that concerns the state. It's one of the flags that they've already put up to say that anything that they do cannot undermine the immigration structures. So this, we're talking about the asylum structures, and they're worried about all other nationalities who arrive in Ireland on the basis of visas, with rights to work, or seeking such rights. But as far as how it will impact on asylum seekers themselves, it's not going to be an unconditional blanket right to work. So Ireland is out of line currently with the majority of Europe. It's the only one of two states, Lithuania being the other one, which has an outright ban for asylum seekers to access the labour market at any point in the system. So whilst they're awaiting a final determination, there is no access at any point. So it's not going to be simply changing that from that scenario to a point of when they arrive in the country that they can seek employment. There will be limitations, there will be restrictions, and there will be a period of time that they will have to wait before they can access the labour market. Throughout Europe, the general rule of thumb, which is contained in a European directive, is that if individuals seeking asylum haven't received what's called a first instance decision within 9 months, then they should be afforded the right to work. So that's the norm, that's the standard around Europe, so that's possibly what Ireland will now be moving towards.
And the Burmese man who took the case, how did he manage to coordinate that? I mean, it's quite a remarkable thing to have been in the country, been an asylum seeker, and then be granted refugee status, and then to take on the state, essentially, in such a groundbreaking case.
Well, I suppose we have seen a number of actions taken against the state by asylum seekers, and then ultimately also by people who are granted status but feel that that they have an issue with the state and they need it addressed at that point. Traditionally, we've seen it more issues taken by asylum seekers in relation to how decisions were made. So there's what's known as judicial review, which is essentially a mechanism for citizens and non-citizens to vindicate their rights. So it's a way of ensuring that if there's a statutory body making a decision that impacts on you as a citizen or indeed as a non-citizen, that they have to do it according to due process and fairness. What this case was, though, was an individual who essentially was looking at the prohibition and seeking for it to be deemed as an unlawful prohibition, and they were seeking to rely on European jurisprudence, European law, and ultimately the Constitution. Now, as far as how he went about it, he had to go through the High Court, he had to go through the Court of Appeal, and ultimately was granted leave to have the issue, because of its importance, considered by the Supreme Court. But in those earlier stages, his rights weren't vindicated, in the sense that the prohibition on accessing the labour market was upheld by the High Court. It was upheld by the Court of Appeal. And it was done so because the Constitution wasn't being used, essentially. The Supreme Court is obviously the body that determines the rights and wrongs of the Constitution. So up until that point, what the Burmese national was trying to rely on was European jurisprudence, which Ireland, you know, isn't bound by, and ultimately that's why it had to go all the way to the Supreme Court before a remedy was found in this case.
Yeah. So, I mean, he must have been delighted when, it was a very long journey for him, so he must have been delighted when he got some vindication.
No, I imagine so. Now, look, JRS is present in 13 centres, and we work with countless numbers of asylum seekers within the direct provision system. I don't have a personal relationship with this man. I'm sorry that he had to languish within the system for that number of years, but I'm sure he's delighted that ultimately what he probably feels and knows to be true, that a wrong was done to him, that has been righted. So I'm sure there is elation with him and all those close to him.
I mean, does that open, though, a floodgate for other people to start taking cases against the state?
Well, it does and it doesn't. I suppose any time a decision is made in any court of the land, a precedent is set. Now, then that precedent can therefore be relied on in the future, but often there will be cases lined up behind, so almost like a class action. So if a decision is made, as it is in this case, it could have an impact on a lot of other individuals who have similar contexts or circumstances that they're experiencing. We have seen recently that the courts in Ireland have afforded or granted damages to asylum seekers within the system on the basis that the delays, which were not of their doing, but of the state's maladministration, it was called, effectively denied them access to certain social welfare payments and certain other benefits. And damages have been awarded in those instances. So I suppose this is probably one of the real concerns of the state, as to they have 6 months to react. They have 6 months to put forward what they will do, what their remedy is, and how they will change the policy. If the Supreme Court is happy with that, the order might simply be just to enforce that. If the Supreme Court isn't happy with that, then we'll have to see, are there punitive damages involved? Is there further legal cases? But a lot will depend, I suppose, on what action is now taken by the state.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I guess people are waiting with bated breath a little bit to see what's going to happen or what's going to come down the line.
Exactly, and I suppose this is a key period for anyone who has any interest in this area, both for asylum seekers themselves, for the groups that purport to represent them or work with them, and for anyone who considers them as a stakeholder. Essentially, this is the time now where the state is going to be changing a long-standing policy, a policy that has been upheld by every party that has formed government over the last 17 years, either upheld or passionately pursued. So it is a monumental time for asylum seekers, and the impact could be very positive. But what we have to ensure is that whatever proposals are ultimately put forward by the state, whatever remedy is agreed upon, is one that actually grants the right to asylum seekers, both those in the direct provision at the moment and those who arrive in the future, and not one that is so laden down with restrictions and other restraints that effectively doesn't benefit any individual.
But I mean, as you say, if it has been upheld or even passionately pursued by most political parties, that must mean that most people also feel that asylum seekers shouldn't work, or that, you know, the public may have some issues with it too.
I would personally believe that the public would welcome asylum seekers working. A lot of the negative commentary made on refugees, on asylum seekers, on migrants, is that they're here for a free ride, that they're asylum shopping, that they're lazy, that they're this, that they're that. And these are all slurs, these are all negative comments. A lot comes down to a lack of understanding that individuals here in this country seeking protection do not have a right to work, and at no point, regardless of their skills, regardless of their abilities, regardless of their desires, at no point can they access the labour market. I think the Irish public would actually welcome people contributing to society, participating to a greater extent, and ultimately it does foster integration. Employment is sort of seen as an indicator of health and well-being, so that's very positive, obviously, from the asylum seeker's perspective, but it is also recognised throughout Europe as a key component of integration. So we need more than ever to have a cohesive society where people are working together, where people are happy, where people are trustful of each other, and anything that fosters that and anything that assists with integration can only but be positive, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, after the recent attacks in London, and obviously they aren't linked, but sometimes in people's minds they do link that sort of stranger danger with the attacks, and, you know, should we start closing our borders, and who are we letting in anyway?
No, of course, and it's very hard to address fears, particularly when such a horrific attack, which was so random in its nature and so devastating for the lives of everybody affected by it. And unfortunately, we've seen a number of attacks in recent months and in recent years that have been perpetrated by individuals who many in Irish society would see as the other, who would see as different. I suppose we have to remember a number of things about it. One, a lot of these can be considered homegrown. They weren't refugees who simply arrived. In a lot of cases, they had no refugee status within their immediate family, within the generations before them. It was an immigration matter. But I think that returns us to the question of integration. Why were these individuals so isolated? Why did they feel so marginalised? Why were they not part of the society that they were in? And why were they so angry at it? And if you isolate people, if you marginalise people, then you will foster anger. You will cut them off from us and them. You will create those structures. So that's why it's very important. I recognise that there's fears, just recognise that there's concerns, and there are genuine security issues, and no one questions that. But that needs to be looked at in parallel with the integration aspects of our society and European societies.